When I think about it being Thanksgiving Day, I think about the ways in which non-Native people were welcomed initially onto Turtle Island. And it always involved feasting. And I was asked to talk a little bit about traditional protocols when you go from one territory to another to another, to how do we respect people and respect the territory that we're in. And it is the case that all across North America, First Nations existed pretty well everywhere, and there were accepted boundaries. And like in Europe, if you look at the European history, there are border skirmishes. There still are some border skirmishes. I think the Alsace-Lorraine area has gone back and forth many times, and Mont-Saint-Michel has been English, then French, then English, then French. And I don't know if the Spanish had a turn in there or not, but many areas have been disputed, and there are border skirmishes. And of course, some of the same thing existed here in North America, where there were, but basically, people knew essentially where their territories were. And in the culture, it is always respectful. If you're going to greet someone, it's always respectful to take something and to offer something. Always in our culture, we want to see an exchange. So even when we do our hug and handshake, if we're standing all in a circle, when we do our hug and handshake, I come and shake each hand of the person in the circle, and I come back to my place, and each person does the same thing. So I've arrived where you are and shaken your hand, and you've arrived where I am and shaken my hand. And in that way, it's like that between us. There isn't really an English word for that. It's balanced, it's settled. I owe you nothing, you owe me nothing. And that reciprocity is always so important in the culture. So if I want a teaching from someone, I approach them with a gift. I'm asking for a gift, I arrive with a gift. And our usual gift is tobacco. And it used to be a nice, clean, naturally grown substance. It's a little bit different now. And with all living cultures, things shift slightly from time to time. So there are many people that are growing now organic tobacco because it's not a bad substance. And when we can't, we still use commercial tobacco. And sometimes we will use cedar or sage, or I had somebody recently give me lavender. Just good medicine. It's delicious. It's good in ice cream and tea and muffins and all kinds of things. And it wards off moths, and it has some health benefits. So always there's that idea of exchange. And it's a good way to approach one another. In the same way that border crossings throughout Europe have certain protocols that are followed now, there were protocols, of course, that were followed from territory to territory. So if the Haida people arrived down in somebody else's territory, one way of approach, and you've probably seen it, is if you're coming to a territory by water, when you get a certain distance away from shore, you stop and hold up your paddles. When both your hands are engaged in holding up the paddle, it's obvious that you're not holding any weapons. And it's a gesture that says, we're here in peace. And then you wait. You wait for the chief and the dignitaries to come down and to actually invite you and welcome you onto the territories. And in every territory, there is a protocol like that. When we are on someone's territory, traditional territory, and there's a big difference between traditional territories and a reserve. And I could talk for a few hours rather excitedly about the reserve system. And it wouldn't all be smiling excitement. But people have traditional territories that they have maintained for thousands and thousands and thousands of years. So whenever we're in somebody else's territory, we usually acknowledge that territory. So when I'm in the Vancouver area, when I'm going to pray, when I'm asked to give opening prayers, then I always say, one of the things I say is to acknowledge, we are grateful to be welcomed into the traditional territory of the Musqueam Nation, the Tsleil-Waututh Nation, and the Squamish Nation, the Tsleil-Waututh Nation, the Musqueam Nation. It's a very good and honorable way to acknowledge that you're in a territory that was occupied for thousands and thousands and thousands of years. When we're standing here, for example, right here where we are on unceded land. This is the unceded territory of the Kikait people, who became almost non-existent on paper, but they're very much alive. But on each territory, wherever we go, it's good to acknowledge that we are on somebody's traditional territory. And in most of British Columbia, we are on unceded territory. In other words, the original owners of this land did not willingly trade it or sell it or part with it. It was taken in an arbitrary way. And for those people, it's still their traditional territory, whether the government acknowledges that or not. That's how the people understand it. So it's just a polite thing to do. It's an honorable and reasonable thing to do, is to just acknowledge. And it's good for us to think about it, to think about where are we? Where are we standing right now? How did this come to be called Saperton? And for what period of time? 100 years? So what happened for the thousands of years before that? What is the name of this territory? What was the name of this area? Who occupied this territory for all those thousands of years? I know that if I occupy my home for more than a year or two or three or four, it really feels like my place. So if you occupy it for thousands of years, it really feels like home. And I think we could say that's a very legitimate to say that's home territory. Now in New Westminster, we have kind of an interesting situation because, as in many places all across North America, there was a very strong desire to take over the lands of the people here. This is not news. In order to do that, you have to find some way to justify taking somebody's territory. If somebody comes in here right now and they want to take over Beacon, they're going to have to find a way to make that seem reasonable. One of the things that was done, as you all know, is that the territories were deemed to be unoccupied. And I don't know if, does anybody remember the great joke from the cheeky, but amazing Australian man, he was a Koori Aboriginal man from Australia, that paddled his canoe up the Thames River and planted his flag on the Terras Nullius and declared this the territory of the Australian Aboriginal people. Do you remember it? Said, well, it's unoccupied. Well, I mean, they may be just passing through. So he just wanted, yes, he just wanted to point out that this is sort of what had happened. North America was pretty fully occupied when people arrived. And it was the ways of our people to roam over fairly vast territories that keeps everything healthy. We don't overfish one area, we don't overlog one area, we don't overharvest in an area. So we move over fairly large areas, and we move from area to area depending on the season. So when the fish are running, we're by the water. When the berries need picking, we're in the berry patches. And this way of life was not always understood, nor was it really wanted to be understood, because there was a great desire to grasp the resources and this land here. So inviting people to acknowledge the traditional territory is, it helps set a little bit of a wrong, a little bit right. And it's a very respectful thing to do, to say, I recognize here. So here, then I would say, I'm acknowledging that I'm on the traditional territory of the Kikait people. And Kikait, and it means loosely resting place. And there's an interesting history here, because the people originally, of course, occupied this entire area. They were confined to three plots of reserve land. One was 104 acres, just New Westminster used to be part, was partly on the south side of the Fraser. So they had 104 acres there. They had another 22 acres where Kruger Mill is now, and another, and occupied also Poplar Island as mostly a burial ground, I believe. Through smallpox and through residential school and through quite considerable amounts of racism and actions that the United Nations has deemed do constitute attempts at genocide, the people here in this area, similar to in Victoria, got just about, well, they were decimated. And the few that remained were sent off to residential school, and with most people that came out of residential school, they came out of residential school feeling very ashamed to be who they were. It was not a good thing to be a Native person for a very long time. And it's something I personally have experienced in my life, and I know that feeling well. So the last few of the Kikait people basically left the area. There weren't economic opportunities for them. There weren't really possibilities for them to proceed. The elders had passed, and the last few people had been in residential school for a very long period of time. Two amazing young women, just 17 and 18 years of age, ended up down in Chinatown. That was a place where they could sort of fit in. They looked similar enough. One sister became a tailor, and the other became a waitress, who subsequently married a businessman, I think he had an insurance agency, by the name of Arthur Lee. They had four children, and the children were raised, assuming they were Chinese. They thought they were Chinese. Although they would occasionally visit several different reserves and call these Aboriginal people aunties and uncles and whatnot, they still had the sense of themselves as Chinese. So one of those people was Rhonda Larrabee, quite an amazing woman. At a certain point, they kind of became aware they were a little more than Chinese and begged their mother to tell them the story. The mother said, I will tell you this story once and once only, and after that, you need to leave this alone. So she told the story about having been in residential school, about all the gruesome things that happened in residential school, which could take 10 Sundays to discuss, and how they were affected and how they just didn't want to be who they were when they came out of there, which was the goal of residential school. And the mother didn't want anything pursued further about who she was or about having First Nations blood. So they had to wait until the mother passed, and then Rhonda took it upon herself to work really hard to dig up her history and found out that she was Kikait. By this time, the government had decided there were no more Kikait people, and they had taken back the reserve lands, and this amazing woman was able to stand up and say, no, here I am. I am Kikait. So she is the chief of the Kikait people, formerly known as the New Westminster Indian Band. And her three brothers are part of that band, and they have two other relatives. There are six of them. in this area. They are the only First Nations in BC without any kind of land base. As soon as they showed up, they asked for their traditional lands back. And what do you think happened? The government rushed over with the titles and said, here, of course. So they still have no land base, but they're working on that. She's an amazing woman, and you may want to have her come sometime to speak to you directly. She's a very fine, articulate woman who has really worked hard to bring awareness to their situation. And so when you're meeting here, you can always acknowledge that you are meeting on the unceded lands of the Kikait people, Kikait First Nations. And that would be very respectful and very helpful. Do you have any questions? Anybody have any questions? Yes, dear one. Yes. It's actually Q-A-Y-T. But it won't help you say it. Unless you're Kikait. If you think of phonetically, it would probably be K-E-K-I-T-E, Kikait. And it means the resting place. Yes. Yes, and say it. Yeah, I thought it was a wonderful thing. I have seen it spelled 5 different ways now. So, and when we get to that place, sometimes when we say it, we have to say, oh, Kikait people, yes. But Kikait is what I understand, yeah. Anything, any other questions? So if you go from place to place to place in BC, it's good to find out whose traditional territory you're on. And if you do go onto that territory, it's always respectful to make an offering of any kind, even if you're in an area, to stop and offer tobacco or medicine or something at that band office or to any of the elders, and thank them that you're walking freely and safely through their traditional territory. It's a good protocol to follow. When I travel around, it's what I tend to do. Even though I've been in many of those places many times, I always give thanks. I always shake hands and give thanks to whomever I first encounter. Or if I'm in a new community, I make sure I find some of the elders or the chief or someone and thank them for allowing me to be in their territory. It's just a polite thing. It's our version, it's our simple version of going across the border and giving your passport and doing all that faldera. That's a native version of it. It's much softer and much more polite. Anything else I can share with you? Yes, sir. The Assembly of First Nations has maps. The United Native Nations has maps. There are a number of Aboriginal organizations that have maps. There are, because there were some sharing, you know, there was some sharing, and so there are some slight boundary blurs. But for the most part, it's not difficult to find out. You can find a lot of it on the computer. You can phone the Assembly First Nations and they can give you more specific information. Yeah. Well, my girl, now we could get into, my name is Aline LaFlamme, and I could get into a little bit more of the flaming part of me. We don't have time. But the situation basically is that by the time the treaty folks were getting over near British Columbia, they didn't bother to do a lot of treaties here. Some of what they did was done so poorly it's not recognized. So if people never gave up their territory, they never sold it, they never signed it over, they never gave it away, it is still their territory. That's what it means. We did not cede our land to anybody. Now, there are places where treaties cover territory, and there are huge disputes around treaties because we had commissions that came along later and unilaterally made changes. We have lots of statements from priests and brothers who said, no, no, the people didn't. They thought, in the Northwest Territories, people thought they were signing an agreement of peace and friendship. Certainly not that they were ceding their territories. They just, as far as they were, signing something that said, you can come and walk amongst us, no problem, as long as you don't disturb our way of life. Sure, come on in. So, but in British Columbia, unceded basically means there has never been an agreement, there's never been a sale, not a bilateral agreement. All right. Okay, dear ones, I think that probably takes up our time. And Francie Louanne knows Rhonda Larrabee. Rhonda Larrabee is an amazing woman, and she also has a lovely poem about her. And you'll see her around New Westminster, and she's a very lovely and approachable and courageous woman. So you're on the unceded territory of the Kikait, and their chief is an amazing woman, Rhonda Larrabee. And Masi Cho, thanks for inviting me here.